You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. Last show we were looking at the section Conscious Parenting, and the subsection, The Conscious Mind, The Creator Within. The evolution of higher mammals, including chimps, cetaceans, and humans, brought forth a new level of awareness called self-consciousness, or simply the conscious mind. The newer conscious mind is an important evolutionary advance. The earlier subconscious mind is our autopilot. The conscious mind is our manual control. For example, if a ball comes near your eye, the slower conscious mind may not have time to be aware of the threatening projectile. Yet the subconscious mind would process some 20 million environmental stimuli per second versus 40 environmental stimuli interpreted by the conscious mind in the same second will cause your eye to blink. The subconscious mind, one of the most powerful information processors known, specifically observes both the surrounding world and the body's internal awareness, reads the environmental cues, and immediately engages previously acquired / learned behaviors, all without help, supervision, or even awareness of the conscious mind. The two minds make a dynamic duo. Operating together, the conscious mind can use its resources to focus on some specific point, such as the party you are going to on Friday night. Simultaneously, your subconscious mind can be safely pushing the lawnmower around and successfully not cutting off your foot or running over the cat, even though you are not consciously paying attention to mowing the lawn. The two minds also cooperate in acquiring very complex behaviors that can subsequently be unconsciously managed. Remember the first day you excitedly sat in the driver's seat of a car, preparing to learn how to drive. The number of things that had to be dealt with by the conscious mind was staggering. While keeping your eyes on the road, you had to also watch the rear and side view mirrors, pay attention to the speedometer and other gauges, use 2 feet for the three pedals of a standard shift vehicle, and try to be calm, cool, and collected as you drove past observing peers. It took what seemed to be a long time before all these behaviors were programmed into your mind. Today you get into the car, turn the ignition on, and consciously review your shopping list as the subconscious mind dutifully engages all of the complex skills that you need to successfully navigate through the city, without even once having to think about the mechanics of driving. I know I am not the only one out there who's experienced this. You are driving and having a delightful discussion with the passenger sitting next to you. In fact, your consciousness gets so caught up in the conversation that somewhere down the road it dawns on you they haven't even paid attention to your driving for 5 minutes. After a momentary start, you realize that you're still on your side of the road and steadily moving along with the flow of traffic. A quick check in the rearview mirror reveals that you did not have a wake of crumpled stop signs and smashed mailboxes. If you weren't consciously driving the car during that time, then who was? The subconscious mind. That's the answer. And how well did it do? Although you didn't observe its behavior, the subconscious mind apparently performed just as well as it was taught during your driver's education experience. In addition to facilitating subconscious habitual programs, the conscious mind also has the power to simultaneously be creative in its responses to environmental stimuli. In its self-reflective capacity, the conscious mind can observe behaviors as long as they're carried out. As a pre-programmed behavior is unfolding, the observing conscious mind can step in, stop the behavior, and create a new response. Thus, the conscious mind offers us free will, meaning we are not just victims of our programming. To pull that off, however, you have to be fully conscious, leave the programming take over, a difficult task. As anyone who's tried willpower can attest, subconscious programming takes over the moment your conscious mind is not paying attention. The conscious mind can also think forward and backward in time, while the subconscious mind is always operating in the present moment. When the conscious mind is busy daydreaming, creating future plans, or reviewing past life experiences, the subconscious mind is always on duty, effectively managing the behaviors required at the moment, without the need of conscious supervision. The two minds are truly a phenomenal mechanism, but here is how it can go awry. The conscious mind is the self, the voice of our own thoughts. It can have great visions and plans for a future filled with love, health, happiness, and prosperity. While we focus our consciousness on happy thoughts, who is running the show? The subconscious. How is the subconscious going to manage our affairs? Precisely the way it was programmed. The subconscious mind's behaviors, when we are not paying attention, may not be of our own creation because most of our fundamental behaviors were downloaded without question from observing other people. Because subconscious generated behaviors are not generally observed by the conscious mind, many people are stunned to hear that they are just like their mom or dad, the people who programmed their conscious minds. The learned behaviors and beliefs acquired from other people, such as parents, peers, and teachers, may not support the goals of our conscious mind. The biggest impediment to realizing the successes of which we dream are the limitations programmed into our subconscious. These limitations not only influence our behavior, but they can play a major role in determining our physiology and health. As we've seen, the mind plays a powerful role in controlling the biological systems that keep us alive. Nature did not intend the presence of the dual minds to be our Achilles heel. In fact, this duality offers a wonderful advantage for our lives. Consider it this way. What if we had conscious parents and teachers who served as wonderful role models, always engaging in humane and win-win relations with everyone in the community? If our subconscious minds were programmed with such healthy behaviors, we could be totally successful in our lives without ever being conscious. The subconscious mind, I keep calling and no one answers. While the thinking self nature of the conscious mind evokes images of the ghost in the machine, there is no similar self-awareness operating in the subconscious mind. The latter mechanism is more akin to a jukebox loaded with behavioral programs, each ready to play as soon as appropriate environmental signals appear and press the selection buttons. If we don't like a particular song in the jukebox, how much yelling at or arguing with the machine will cause it to reprogram its playlist? In my college days, I saw many an inebriated student to no avail curse and kick jukeboxes that were not responsive to their requests. Similarly, we must realize that no amount of yelling or cajoling by our conscious mind can ever change the behavioral tapes programmed into the subconscious mind. Once we realize the ineffectiveness of this tactic, we quit engaging in a pitched battle with the subconscious mind and take a more clinical approach to reprogramming it. Engaging the subconscious in battle is as pointless as kicking the jukebox in the hope that it will reprogram the playlist. The futility of battling with a subconscious is a hard message to get across, because one of the programs most of us downloaded when we were young is that willpower is admirable. So we try over and over again to override the subconscious program. Usually such efforts are met with various degrees of resistance, because the cells are obligated to adhere to the subconscious program before all else. Tensions between conscious willpower and subconscious programs can result in serious neurological disorders. For me, a powerful image of why we should not challenge the subconscious comes from the movie Shine. In the movie, based on a true story, Australian concert pianist David Helfgott defies his father by going off to London to study music. Helfgott's father, a survivor of the Holocaust, programmed his son's subconscious mind with the belief that the world was unsafe and that if he stood out, it might be life-threatening. His father insisted that he would be safe only if he stayed close to his family. In spite of his father's relentless programming, Helfgott knew that he was a world-class pianist who needed a break from his father to realize his dream. In London, Helfgott played the notoriously difficult third piano concerto of Rachmaninoff in a competition. The film shows the conflict between his conscious mind wanting success and his subconscious mind concerned with being visible, being internationally recognized, and seeing this as life-threatening. As he labors through the concerto, sweat pouring from his brow, Helfgott's conscious mind fights to stay in control, while his subconscious mind, fearful of winning, tries to take control of his body. Helfgott consciously forces himself to maintain control through the concerto until he plays the last note. Then he passes out, overcome by the energy it took to battle his subconscious programming throughout the whole presentation. For that victory over the subconscious, he pays a high price. When he comes to, he's found to be insane. Most of us engage in less dramatic battles with our subconscious mind as we try to undo the programming received as children. Witness our ability to continuously seek out jobs that we fail at or remain in jobs that we hate because we don't deserve a better life. Conventional methods for suppressing destructive behaviors include drugs and talk therapy. Newer approaches promise to change our programming, recognizing that there's a no use reasoning with the subconscious tape player. These methods capitalize on the findings of quantum physics that connect energy and thought. In fact, these modalities that reprogram previously learned behaviors can be collectively referred to as energy psychology, a burgeoning field based on new biology. But how much easier would it be to be nurtured from the beginning of life so that you can reach your genetic and creative potential? How much better to become a conscious parent so that your children and their children will become conscious parents, making reprogramming unnecessary and making for a happier, more peaceful planet.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BCSPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF, 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. We're looking at the chapter, Conscious Parenting, the subsection, A Twinkle in Your Parents' Eyes, Conscious Conception and Conscious Pregnancy. We all know the expression, quote, when you were only a twinkle in your parents' eyes, unquote. A phrase that conjures up the happiness of loving parents who truly want to conceive a child. It turns out is also a phrase that sums up the latest genetic research suggesting that parents should cultivate that twinkle in the months before they conceive the child. That growth-promoting awareness and intention can produce a smarter, happier, and healthier baby, according to the scientific research. Research reveals that parents act as genetic engineers for their children in the months before conception. In the final stages of egg and sperm maturation, a process called genomic imprinting adjusts the activity of specific groups of genes that will shape the character of the child yet to be conceived. Reich and Walter research suggests that what is going on in the lives of parents during the process of genomic imprinting has a profound influence on the mind and body of their child. A scary thought, given how unprepared most people are to finally have a baby. Verney writes in Pre-Parenting, Nurturing Your Child from Conception, quote, it makes a difference whether we are conceived in love, haste, or hate, and whether a mother wants to be pregnant. Parents do better when they live in a calm and stable environment, free from addictions and supported by family and friends. Interestingly enough, Aboriginal cultures have recognized the influence of the conception environment for millennia. Prior to conceiving a child, couples ceremoniously purify their minds and bodies to prepare for the event of conception. Once the child is conceived, an impressive body of research is documenting how important parents' attitudes are in the development of the fetus. Again, Verney writes, quote, in fact, the great weight of scientific evidence that has emerged over the last decade demands that we reevaluate the mental and emotional abilities of unborn children. Awake or asleep, the studies show they, meaning the unborn children, are constantly turned into their mother's every action, thought, and feeling. From the moment of conception, the experience in the womb shapes the brain and lays the groundwork for personality, emotional temperament, and the power of higher thought. Now is the time to stress that the new biology is not a return to the old days of blaming mothers for every ailment that medicine doesn't understand, from schizophrenia to autism. Mothers and fathers are in the conception and pregnancy business together, even though it is the mother who carries the child in her womb. What the father does profoundly affects the mother, which in turn affects the developing child. For example, if the father leaves and the mother starts questioning her own ability to survive, his leaving profoundly changes the interaction between the mother and the unborn baby. Similarly, societal factors such as lack of employment, substandard or lack of housing, and poor health care or endless wars that pull fathers into the military can affect the parents and thus will have an impact on the developing child. The essence of conscious parenting is that both mothers and fathers have important responsibilities for fostering healthy, intelligent, productive, and joy-filled children. We surely cannot blame ourselves nor our parents for failures in our own or our children's lives. Science has kept our attention focused on the notion of genetic determinism, leaving us ignorant about the influence beliefs have on our lives and, more importantly, how our behaviors and attitudes program the lives of our children. Most obstetricians and also are still uneducated about the importance of parental attitudes in the development of an unborn child. According to the notion of genetic determinism, they were steeped in as medical students, fetal development is mechanically controlled by genes with little additional contribution from the mother. Consequently, OBGYNs are only concerned with a few maternal prenatal issues. Is she eating right? Is she taking enough vitamins? Does she exercise regularly? These questions focus on what they believe is the mother's principal role, the provision of nutrients to be used by the genetically programmed fetus. But the developing child receives far more than nutrients from the mother's blood. Along with nutrients, the fetus absorbs excess glucose if the mother is diabetic, and excess cortisol and other fight or flight hormones if the mother is chronically stressed. Research now offers insight into how this system works. If a mother is under stress, she activates her HPA axis, which provides fight or flight responses in a threatening environment. Stress hormones prepare the body to engage in a protection response. Once these maternal signals enter the fetal bloodstream, they affect the same target tissues and organs in the fetus as they did in the mother. In stressful environments, fetal blood preferentially flows into the muscles and hindbrain, providing nutritional requirements needed by the arms and legs and by the region of the brain responsible for life-saving reflex behavior. In supporting the function of the protection-related systems, blood flow is shunted from the visceral organs and stress hormones suppress forebrain function. Development of fetal tissue and organs is proportional to both the amount of blood they receive and the function they provide. When passing through the placenta, the hormones of a mother experiencing chronic stress will chronically alter the distribution of blood flow to the fetus and change the character of her developing child's physiology. At the University of Melbourne, E. Marilyn Wintour's research on pregnant sheep, who, amazingly enough, are quite physiologically quite similar to humans, has found that prenatal exposure to cortisol eventually leads to high blood pressure. Fetal cortisol levels play a very important regulatory role in the development of the kidney's filtering units, or the nephrons. A nephron cell are intimately involved with regulating the body's salt balance and consequently are important in controlling blood pressure. Excess cortisol absorbed from a stressed mother modifies fetal nephron formation. An additional effect of excess cortisol is that it simultaneously switches the mother's and fetus system from a growth state to a protective posture. As a result, the growth-inhibiting effect of excess cortisol in the womb causes the babies to be born smaller. Suboptimal conditions in the womb that lead to low birth weight babies have been linked to a number of adult ailments that scientists have outlined, specifically in the book by Nathalie Lez, in his book Life in the Womb, including higher rates of diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. For example, Dr. David Barker of England's University of Southampton has found that a male who weighs fewer than 5.5 pounds at birth has a 50% greater chance of dying of heart disease than one with a higher birth rate. Harvard researchers have found that women who weigh fewer than 5.5 pounds at birth, have 23% higher risk of cardiovascular disease than women born heavier. David Leon of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine has found that diabetes is three times more common in 60-year-old men who are small and thin at birth. The new focus on the influences of the prenatal environment extends to the study of IQ, which genetic determinants and races once linked simply to genes. But in 1997, Bernie Devlin, a professor of psychiatry at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, carefully analyzed 212 earlier studies that compared the IQs of twins, siblings, and parents and their children. He concluded that genes amount for only 48% of the factors that determine IQ. And when the synergistic effects of mingling the mother and father's genes are factored in, the true inherited component of intelligence plummets even further to 34%. Devlin, on the other hand, found that conditions during prenatal development significantly impact IQ. He reveals that up to 51% of a child's potential intelligence is controlled by environmental factors. Previous studies have already found that drinking or smoking during pregnancy can cause decreased IQ in children, as can exposure to lead in the womb. The lesson for people who want to be parents is that you can radically shortchange the intelligence of your child simply by the way you approach pregnancy. These IQ changes are not accidents. They are directly linked to altering the blood flow in a stressed brain. In a lecture that I once gave on conscious parenting, I cited research, but I also showed a video from an Italian conscious parenting organization, Associazione Nazionale Educazione Prenatale, which graphically illustrates the interdependent relationship between parents and their unborn child. In this video, a mother and father engage in a loud argument while the woman is undergoing a sonogram. You can vividly see the fetus jump when the argument starts. The startled fetus arches its back and body and jumps up as if it were on a trampoline when the argument is punctuated with shattering glass. The power of modern technology in the form of a sonogram helps to lay to rest the myth that the unborn child is not a sophisticated enough organism to react to anything other than its nutritional environment. We're going to continue looking at this book in future shows, looking, for example, at Nature's Head Start Program, Conscious Mothering and Fathering, and many other very interesting topics. So please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.